Star Trek fans, and welcome to the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is James.
And we're watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine from the beginning, one episode at a time. Welcome back to the podcast. Today we are on Season 2, Episode 2, entitled The Circle. This episode aired October 3rd, 1993. Before we dig into this, is there anything you want to talk about from the first episode of Season 2?
Well, I think we decided we're not going to watch multi-part episodes all together. We're going to watch the individual pieces and then comment on them.
Yeah, it seemed like a good idea,
yeah.
Except it sort of taints your view of the individual episodes if you know how it ends. If we're trying to kind of stay true to how it aired, it would make sense if we just did them one at a time.
Yeah, and that's a good way of putting it.
We actually had a last time on Deep Space Nine recap at the beginning of this episode with Loaxana's voice. We showed the circle graffiti, Kira rescuing the Bajoran prisoners from Cardassia 4, then Frank Langella saying she declared war on Cardassia, but thankfully they declined the invitation, Sisko telling Lee Nalas that Bajor doesn't need a man, it needs a symbol. And then, of course, the big drama of Jaro, Frank Langella, giving Kira's job to Lee right at the end.
Surely the circle is a symbol, so they've actually got a symbol.
Well, we start in Sisko's office with Minister Jaro claiming to be surprised at Sisko's reaction to the change of his first officer. Jaro was under the impression that Major Kira has been nothing but trouble, and Sisko interrupts him asking, "Who gave you that impression?" And he says, "Common knowledge." Which, I mean, very suspicious, this dude. Yeah. He's freaking me out.
I like Sisko's leadership here. I mean, he's standing up for his first officer.
He is.
We'd established that there was now this respect between the two of them. So it's good to see it in practice.
Yeah, and we see some good relationships across all of the crew members in this episode, probably the thing I like most about it. So Sisko is annoyed, and he says, "Major Kira has my complete respect. She's been invaluable, and now she's been dismissed without anyone consulting me, and I don't appreciate it." Then Jaro kind of spins this story about how this is a promotion for Kira because she was the one who brought Lee Nalas back to Bajor. But then he says, "We have to find the proper spot for her." I mean, if she doesn't have a job and she wasn't informed, that doesn't sound like a promotion to me. Right. I think he might be full of it.
Oh, yeah. This is some great acting here.
Yeah.
In the way he's saying it and presenting it, it's so disingenuous.
Yeah.
And he's doing it so beautifully.
Yeah, he's sneaky.
I really enjoyed this scene.
I think Jaro is great. Frank Langella is just another great guest star in a long line of great guest stars. They have just really excellent pedigreed actors in these roles.
Uh-huh.
So Sisko is like, "Well, it's a different matter if it's a promotion." For a minute, I was thinking to myself, there's a warm wind blowing in from Minicoy. Jaro sits down. "I'm sorry. It's just an old saying from Earth." "Is it?" I wrote in my notes. It all started with a famous ambassador from Minicoy who used to bluster, exaggerate, and dissemble to get what he wanted. Not at all like you or me. He was a bag of hot air, and everyone recognized him for what he was. I wasn't really sure I understood this little anecdote. Did you understand what he was trying to say?
I think what he was saying was this politician was a windbag and would not tell the truth and make stuff up.
Right.
He's comparing Jaro to that politician.
So he recognizes that this is all a lie.
Oh, I have no doubt Sisko knows exactly what's going on. And I think that statement was a deliberate insult.
Yeah.
To let Jaro know in a polite way that, yes, I know what type of person you are.
I also like here that it's a story about a famous ambassador. When are ambassadors famous if they're not named Spock? Jaro asks if he's satisfied with the assignment of Lee to fill the open post. Sisko is surprised, thinking they'd want Lee in the capital to strengthen the provisional government. Drink. That's what I thought too. This isn't a very visible or influential position when it comes to uniting Bajor, but I guess perhaps that's the point.
Right.
Jaro is concerned the capital doesn't seem very safe these days with the circle's activities. The fires and graffiti were a nuisance, but 2 days ago, a fellow minister was attacked and beaten. We can't risk the same thing happening to Lee Nalas. This is so suspicious, right? The entire thing.
Completely.
Just give him some extra security, but okay. Evil Jaro, that's my new name for him now, because he's up to something. He plays with the baseball on Sisko's desk a bit, and then he leaves abruptly. As he steps outside the door, he says, "Look at it this way, Commander. We're entrusting Bajor's greatest hero to you. Could you have a better liaison officer than Lee Nalas? I think not." After he wanders off, Miles pokes his head in, saying Jake is waiting to talk to him. On the comm, Jake says he's outside of their quarters and wants his dad to come down. So Sisko heads down there, and as you could have guessed, on their door is the circle's yellow symbol. I mean, you could see that coming 10 miles away.
They've been tagged.
Yeah. First of all, today we would have just sent a picture, right? We keep making Cisco come down and look at things instead of just sending you a picture.
It again is that area they've missed of the fact that cameras are everywhere. Yeah.
Yes. I also thought we increased security, but security remains terrible on the station.
Yeah, why would you put security around the commander's quarters?
And then we cue the theme song.
This is a great opening segment to the show. I mean, there's so much that they put into here.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of subtext, I thought. Sisko's openly dissing the minister. The minister's basically telling him how Kira's been moved out the way. He's pushed Lilalis, you know, into a backwater, effectively, to stop anybody from supporting him or him getting support.
Right.
There's another thing I thought that was sort of odd here. He pointed out how Starfleet doesn't consult with them over promotions. That, to me, would seem somewhat tone deaf on Starfleet's side if they're not talking to the Bajorans on a Bajoran station about how the leadership is made up on that station.
But there's also hardly anybody on that station from Starfleet. It's really just a handful of people.
Certainly the senior members of Starfleet, you would want to let the Bajorans know or tell them what their background is, maybe even get the Bajorans to approve them, even if it's just, you know, a rubber stamp.
Do you wonder if this was a dig at Sisko being handed to them without their involvement?
Well, I think Sisko, Dax, you know, all the people who are on there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe the Bajorans didn't get any input into that. And that is still a cause. It's a Bajoran station, and we don't get to pick who the officers are.
Right. I do think in many cases, the Federation is quite tone deaf in how they're dealing with Bajor in general. It's not just Starfleet.
But I do like how Sisko stands up for Kira.
Yeah. After the theme song, we're in Kira's quarters, and she's packing up. Odo rings the bell and comes in. He's upset that she's leaving, but she says she has no choice. Odo is really unhappy about this, saying she's not leaving, she's surrendering. Kira does seem resigned to the situation. You break the rules, you pay. Wait a minute. Odo is like, that doesn't sound like the Kira Nerys who has made a career out of breaking rules.
No, it does not.
You've been breaking rules for 14 and a half years. Cardassian, Bajoran, Federation rules, they're all meaningless to you because you have a personal code that's always mattered more. And I'm sorry to say you're in slim company. He's very annoyed.
Yeah, I think this is the most animated we've seen Odo.
Yeah. He's pointing at her and he's ranting. Yeah. Although his face is not moving, of course, because his makeup is still a bit of a struggle.
Yes.
She gives him a little smile and she just says, I'll miss you too, Odo, which was adorable.
Yeah.
This is maybe the most relatable Odo has ever been, at least relatable to me. He doesn't like change and he's taking it out by ranting. I feel like I can relate to that.
I also like that how it took the wind out of his sails. I mean, he's like in full rant. She says, I'll miss you too.
Because he hadn't thought of it that way. It hadn't occurred to him that he was just going to miss her. Yeah. He's surprised she hasn't asked Sisko for help, but she says she's sure that he'll do what he thinks is best for the station. Odo is shocked she's not fighting for what she wants because it's what she does best. Well, maybe I just want a vacation, she says. Odo scoffs, of course, because that's what he does. Idiotic bureaucracy. I suppose they'll expect me to break in a new man. A great man, Kira interrupts. Lilalis can handle the job, believe me. Odo says, well, you did fairly well at it once I smoothed your rough edges, which is rich coming from him. She laughs at this and says, I thought you did fairly well once I smoothed your rough edges.
Boom, right back at you, kid.
Yeah, this is so cute. Then in comes Dax, asking if she's disturbing anything. Kira says, stick around, you can help me cry in my synth ale. She came to return some epidemic lotion, which, oh my god, the iPad turned into epidemic lotion. I'm not even kidding.
Seems appropriate.
Yeah, anyway, Kira says, if you like it, then keep it. And Odo is so annoyed, he can't understand how they can be chatting about lotion at a time like this.
It's good to see the girls talking about makeup.
Yeah, and in comes Bashir.
Okay, this is the point that I'm going to say I found this scene kind of silly.
Oh my god.
I thought this scene started off well and then just drove off the cliff of silly.
I'm going to tell you, this was my favorite scene of Deep Space Nine so far.
No.
Loved it.
Really?
Loved it. And I'll tell you why if we keep going. Kira is telling Dax that she doesn't know where she'll be stationed, but after she's taken some leave, she's earned a desk in the Foreign Affairs building somewhere. Bashir says, I came to give you my best. And Dax says, in response to the previous statement, well, that's rather dull. And Bashir thinks they're talking about him, which is funny. And then Odo interrupts, saying, Dr. Bashir, if you were Kira, wouldn't you at least be complaining to Sisko? Bashir says he just came to wish her good luck. And Kira says, thank you, doctor. And then Bashir says, complaining about what? Never mind, doctor, Odo says. If she doesn't care, why should we? Then they start asking if she's been given a reason or any alternative for this change. They're all talking at once. It's kind of like a stage play with really snappy timing. And this is where I put down in my notes that this is maybe the best scene ever on this show. So that's why I'm so funny that you thought it was bad.
I did not like it.
And then in comes Miles. Bashir is confused. He's like, she doesn't care about leaving? And Odo says, she's done well here. She should stay. And I say, she could use a little support from her friends, doctor. Well, Bashir says. Miles is like, I didn't mean to intrude. Bashir says, don't worry, chief. It's all been said. But Odo says, I have a good deal more to say. Thank you, doctor. Odo is so annoyed.
Oh, I'm sure Odo does have a lot more to say.
Miles wonders if he should come back later. Dax is like, Odo, leave her alone. This is Kira's decision to make, unless, of course, you want me to talk to Sisko. Kira says she knew what she was doing when she went to Cardassia 4. She knew the risk. That's not what she asked, Odo says. Then Miles interrupts, I'd just like to say it's been a pleasure serving with you. Bashir says, maybe someone could explain this conversation to me.
Poor Bashir.
Then in comes Quark, and he shouts, a party! And jumps into the middle of it all, startling Bashir. He's brought Kira's favorite synth ale, which Kira says thank you for, but Odo points out the bottle is very small, and Quark says, well, he was anticipating a far smaller gathering.
I love how Quark totally misses what's going on. And manages to make it about himself.
Well, sure.
With the, I would have reduced my rates.
Very on-brand for Quark.
Yes. Also, the very small bottle.
Yes. Well, he said he came for an intimate farewell drink, a sympathetic smile, and a shoulder to cry on. And he says to Odo, you'd be surprised how often that works with women. I paused it when I was taking notes here, and the looks of disgust on Kira and Dax's face was priceless. Kira takes the synth ale and says, is this a joke? Did you plan this? Bashir says, nobody could have planned this, because he's still confused. And then the bell rings again, and this time it's Vedic Barile, which is a surprise. We met him in the last episode of season one, where Vedic Wynn tried to have him assassinated so she could become the Kai. Anyway, here he is in his orange robe and his feathered hair, and he says, I hope I'm not interrupting.
So he never leaves the monastery, but he's been to the station like twice in 2 weeks now?
I think more than a week passed since the end of last season.
Oh, okay.
So after he says, I hope I'm not interrupting, I thought, you are interrupting the best scene of the show. I'm so sad you didn't like this scene. She says, please come in. These are my friends. And they all look at him kind of awkwardly. She had no idea he was coming to DS9. And he says, well, nowadays it's wiser not to announce these things. The violence on Bajor has escalated, and it seems like there are more weapons on the street now than during the occupation. How could that be? Kira wonders. Where could they be coming from? But Barile says he tries to concentrate on more spiritual matters. Then he asks if she has any immediate plans now that her duties on the station have ended. This makes everyone turn and look at her because they all want the answer to that question. He suggests she comes to the monastery for a while because it can help when the spirit gets a little bruised. Thank you, she says. And then we finally end the best scene that's ever happened on this show. First of all, this is why I like teams. This is what happens. You care. You care about each other. You look out for each other. You don't want it to change. And Odo, the one with the least amount of social skills, is the one who hates change the most because he's comfortable with Kira.
Right.
He doesn't know how to express that, and it kind of comes out of him in anger. And it's really sort of a form of love, I suppose, at this point.
Yeah, that's a good description of it.
Yeah. But then also, when Barile comes into the chaos with this sort of peaceful message that obviously interests her in multiple ways, it piques her attention because she needs something to look forward to. Otherwise, the ending of the scene wouldn't have made sense.
Right.
And I wasn't sure before this scene that any of them really cared about each other. But by the end of this scene, I felt it. Yeah. I believed it. I finally thought, this is a group of people who are out for each other. They're working for each other and with each other.
I think it was just the way the scene was implemented. I wasn't that keen on.
It was very much like a stage play.
It's not that I didn't like the message. I thought it felt a bit French farcy.
I'm so disappointed that you didn't like the scene. This is easily my favorite piece of writing so far, period. I wish the whole show were like that scene.
That's why we see different things in the show.
I'm so sad. Okay. Kira comes into an empty ops, and we have a weird dramatic camera angle from below the entrance looking up at her as she surveys the room and walks through it. She pauses to look at the center console. Lee comes up the elevator behind her. He's wearing the lavender Bajoran uniform that Inara and Neela were wearing in the previous episodes. I don't yet know the significance of the colors, but their uniforms are pretty great.
This reminded me of when O'Brien walked around the Enterprise Bridge in the pilot.
Oh, when he had to go and visit his favorite transporter room?
Except Kira's probably not trying to steal some bedding.
I don't think he was trying to steal bedding from the bridge, but Jake needed a bed. I think maybe he was trying to get into the ready room and get the couch.
Oh yeah, definitely.
It looks like she's just looking around like, this has been, what, I don't know. It hasn't even been that long. She hasn't even been there over a year, has she?
just must be months. Remember, a year before, she'd been fighting in a nameless swamp.
But I do think, again, if you look at the previous scene and the level of comfort that she's built up with her team,
yeah,
I think maybe she's feeling a little bit sorry about losing a thing that she's finally built up, right? She's finally got some personal relationships. She finally got something positive going. So maybe she's feeling a bit wistful about that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is somebody who's been in fighting and combat for most of her life. And this is probably the safest she's ever been.
It would also make sense that when she does build a bond, that bond is something that she clings to quite a bit, especially now.
Yeah.
Well, she tells Lee that if there's anything she can do to help, she will. He says, Major, I'm sorry, I didn't want this job. Neither did I, she says. I mean, back when I was sent here in the first place. But it turned out better than I expected. I'm sure it will for you, too. She's certainly taking this well. Lee doesn't even know what he's supposed to be doing on the station. How does a Navark fit into this command structure, he wonders out loud. And we talked about this last time, but a Navark is like the commander of a fleet in ancient Greece, so it doesn't really make sense in the Starfleet command structure. Sisko comes down from his office just then and says, as I understand it, you report directly to the prophets, which is a very interesting position. Do you think this is a God told me I can keep all the money position then?
Yes, very much so.
Sisko says, well, from time to time, I might ask for your help. And Lee says, Commander, anything you need from me, I will try my best to do. But I know I can't replace Major Kira. No one could, Sisko says. Thank you, Kira says. Request permission to disembark.
He really does seem to be a very humble, genuine character.
Yeah. Lee kind of steps away, and once he's out of earshot, Sisko says, I'm going to get you back, Major. I promise that to both of us. Then he follows her up to the elevator, and she leaves, looking very sad, and she goes down that ridiculously slow open-air elevator, which just makes the scene weird.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah, it was good.
Sisko seemed so genuine and so serious. It was very sincere.
Yep, agreed.
I mean, do you think that this was very personal to him? I mean, not only had the minister punished Kira, but he had also deliberately trod on Sisko's toes.
Yes, I think it's very personal to Sisko. I mean, we don't know a lot about him either. We don't know a lot about anybody. We haven't done a great job yet of developing all of these characters, but he has very clearly developed a trust in her and a respect for her. And I think he felt like he had to work kind of all season to get that respect back. And now he's finally got it. And I think from his perspective, he would rather not start over.
Yeah.
But I mean, again, I think it's just like that scene with all of the people in it. Sisko's not in it, but I think it's the same thing. It's like, hey, we finally have developed this bond. Uh-huh. And now, what a waste. Down on Bajor, casual Kira is working in the monastery gardens. You know what word sucks to spell? Monastery. The A and the E are mixed up. And I type it wrong every single time. So annoying.
It should be an E, shouldn't it?
It's so wrong. So she's trying unsuccessfully to arrange a stone path in the water when Vedic Barile comes up behind her. Her hair is amazing. All of a sudden, it was so much poofier when she left the station, but now she's like killing it with bangs. It looks great.
Yeah, I would have to agree. Excellent hair.
It's a very modern style still.
Well, they are in the future.
She says, the stones are perfect. I'm the one who's crooked. Sometimes I even like being that way. She climbs out of the water and up to the path with him, and they're very close, staring at each other quietly for an awkward moment. She says, if she stays here much longer, she'll destroy the entire arboretum. And he says, well, maybe you'd rather try your hand at woodcrafts, which makes her smile.
The Vedic does seem to get very close to Kira a lot.
They're very close, yes. She says she has absolutely no artistic skills, and she feels useless, and she needs to be useful. Barile thinks it might be good for her to explore useless for a while. See how it feels, she laughs. He's a little bit of a dud, this guy. I mean, I imagine it's because he's trying to play someone peaceful, serene, but it comes across a bit boring. Unlike Kai Opaka, who is very good at making serene interesting.
That's funny you should say that, because I just get this creepy vibe from him. I can totally see what they're trying to do, which is to make him seem almost mystic.
Yeah, it doesn't work. I totally agree. He does have a kind of weird, creepy vibe.
Yeah, I mean,
totally agree.
It's sort of like a serial killer vibe.
I think it's partly because he's very robotic in this serenity thing. Like, he doesn't really seem to smile. He doesn't feel casual. It feels a little bit forced.
Yes. Whereas if you contrast that with Kai Opaka, she seemed very sort of just laid back.
Well, think about the scene in Battle Lines when they were in the shuttle and they were starting to crash onto that moon. She was so excited, Right. And she showed it, even though she was still giving across the I'm in control vibe.
Yeah.
She was so excited to be there and so excited to be, I guess, on the way to this prophecy. She didn't yet know what was about to happen. He says, "It's time, isn't it? Come inside with me." Kira looks at him a bit suspiciously, maybe because of that creepy vibe we were just talking about. And the music swells. But in they go, and they're in some fancy room in the monastery.
"Kira, let me show you my collection of heads from my victims."
Oh, geez. Kira is very stunned to see a migraine trigger, which on this podcast is another name for an orb of the prophets. She says, "All my life I've dreamed of this. There was one on the station. Didn't she get to see it? Nobody let her look at it?"
Yeah, it's the basis for her religion.
Dax was playing with it. I mean, jeez. I guess they didn't know each other yet.
Yeah, that's true.
He opens the box, revealing the migraine trigger, and then he steps away as she stares into it. As this blue light hits her, he says, "It's the third orb, the orb of prophecy and change. Here comes the migraine. What do I do?" she calls out as he leaves. "Be useless, Nerys. Allow the prophets to guide you." And then she is zapped into the Chamber of Ministers. It's all orange, and she's back in uniform. Dax appears behind her in a weird, ornate, nun-like costume, while a crowd around her is shouting unintelligibly.
Dax makes a great Bajoran nun.
"Listen to them, Kira," Dax says. Then Kira hugs her, but when she pulls back from the hug, she gasps, as Dax has now turned into evil Vedic Wynn.
Boom.
"Can you hear them now, child?" The light in the room seems to darken a bit as the shouting continues, and then Jaro appears behind her saying, "I hear them, Major. They're calling to me." "Don't listen to him, Nerys," Barail says as he approaches. I thought it was interesting that they all called her something different.
Yeah.
She got Kira, Child, Major, and Nerys. And Barail says, "Allow yourself to hear them. They're calling to you." And then he emerges from a bright doorway, and he's wearing a uniform like hers. But then it all takes a weird turn, and suddenly she's naked. And evil Vedic Wynn shouts blasphemy from behind her. It's like a weird nightmare.
Fever dream.
Again, Barail says, "Listen to them." But she's like, "I don't know how." And then he's behind her, and now he's naked. And I don't know where we're going here. And they start to kiss. And just before their lips touch, the migraine ends. And she's like back in the room. It's like, that was no help. Why are prophecies always riddles?
So my question here is, so how accurate are these prophecies?
What do you mean?
Do they accurately predict the future? Or are they a possible future? Is this what Kyle Parker saw before getting killed or stranded on the planet of idiots?
Planet of idiots. That should have been the name of that episode. Instead of battle lines, it should have been called the Moon of Idiots. I don't know, because she didn't know what her prophecy meant either.
Yeah.
She just knew that she wasn't coming back from it.
Oh.
But I don't know. They don't really say, at least not in this episode. But prophecies are always riddles. In every TV show and movie, they never make sense. I think that's just why they call them prophecies, just to make it be a riddle.
I assume they're potential futures. That's what I take from it.
Yeah. So potentially Dax could be wearing Vedic Wynn's costume.
Dax becomes a Bajoran nun.
Back in the station, Odo is on the comm with someone on Bajor who's wearing the same uniform as him. The guy is saying, "Last night alone, we had dozens of beatings. They're everywhere until we go looking for them, and then they're nowhere." Which Odo says suggests they have powerful friends to warn them and protect them. "Probably," the guy says, "but we have to put a stop to this before it gets out of hand. The provisional government, drink, is bringing troops into the capital. That will put an end to the circle. You keep your eyes open out there, my friend," he says. Odo says, "I always do," just as Quark comes into his office. Odo hangs up. Quark says, "It's over, Odo. The provisional government..." Drink. Lots of drinks in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
"The Federation being here, all of it. We've got to leave. Well, I do anyway. You can just turn into a couch."
Oh, beautiful.
Oh, Quark. That was delightful.
What if he wanted to be a painting?
Or a rat. "You mean because of this circle business?" Odo scoffs and says, "They're just a bunch of hooligans who use violence to get attention." I mean, he was more upset about Kira leaving than he is about the terrorists.
Yes.
I like that about him. I think that's good. He turns around and he starts to ignore Quark until Quark says he happens to know they have enough weapons and explosives and supplies to support an army. He says they're getting them from the Kressari. Then Odo whirls around and says that doesn't even make any sense. The Kressari are botanic DNA traders. They don't even have a military. What the heck is a botanic DNA trader? Quarks is something about them delivering flowers, so I guess they're, I don't know, they have a nursery.
If only Keiko had been in this episode, she could have explained it.
Oh my God, right. The botanist. Odo asks the computer when the next Chrysari vessel is due, and the computer says the Chrysari vessel, Kalandan, is scheduled to arrive in 36 hours. He tells Quark to find out where the weapons are being sent on Bajor. You're out of your mind. My plan is to put as much distance as possible between me and Bajor. Odo sighs and he says, I hate to do this. And Quark shouts, that's not fair. He's like, whatever you're going to do, I know it's not fair.
I like the way Quark heads straight to that place.
Oh, it was great. And Odo says, you're a deputy. What? I want you to find out where the weapons are going on Bajor. Meanwhile, I'm going to find out exactly where they're coming from. Quark laughs and he starts to leave, but Odo gives him a choice of being a deputy or being put in a cell for impeding an investigation, unless you want to reveal the identities of your sources. Well, that's not fair, Quark says. Well, it's your choice, deputy or prisoner. So Quark says, I'm a deputy, in like a, I'm a little teapot voice.
Armin Shimmerman, he's got that laugh down.
He does have the crazy Quark laugh.
Yeah, it's bordering on unsettling and not quite sinister.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So question here. Now, Quark seems to very openly talk to Odo. So surely some of the people that deal with Quark might get upset about him hanging out or having too close a relationship with the law.
Well, we talked about that actually in the previous episode when Rom was giving him a hard time for giving info to Odo, remember?
Oh, declare peace every now and then.
Right. And Quark quoted the 76th rule of acquisition saying, every once in a while, declare peace. It confuses the hell out of your enemies. I don't know if he's doing that here, but I do think what he's doing in general is trying to use Odo, you know, in a way to protect himself. And yeah. Also, I do think he's developed a bit of a friendship with Odo, and he seemed like he was coming in there to warn him that he's getting the heck out of Dodge.
Gotcha. I think they missed an opportunity here for Quark and Odo Super Cops spin-off series.
Absolutely. That would have been a good show, especially for the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
So Sisko is coming out of his office saying he has to go to Bajor because Odo has some info suggesting Bajor is facing a coup. He tells Lee to use his military contacts to see how much support the provisional government, drink, has. Lee follows Sisko to the elevator, saying he thinks they should establish a curfew on the station as another cargo bay was vandalized last night. Good idea, Sisko says. Then he tells Lee that Odo will assign a bodyguard to him for protection. He protests, but he still says it's a good idea. We go back to the monastery gardens, and Kira comes out to see Beryl. Woodcrafts, she says. Definitely the way to go. Is that where the prophets led you? Yeah, lots of hammers, nails, and saws, surrounded by monks and vedics. Very safe. So you don't want to talk about it? No, she says. Then they start walking along a path, and he tells her that the last time he encountered the third orb, she was part of his vision. And he doesn't mention if it was a naked migraine or not. He just says that vision was the reason that he came to the station to invite her to the monastery. She asks what part she played in his vision, and he doesn't say, because probably a naked one. And he says he was just wondering if he was part of hers. No, no, no. You weren't, she lies. Just as there are some big booms in the distance.
So why don't you think she told him?
Well, you would? I wouldn't.
Not even necessarily that you were having a vision of them naked, but you could just say, yes, I saw you. You were in it. You were wearing a Bajoran uniform.
Well, she hasn't processed it yet, and it's embarrassing, and she doesn't know if she saw something between them, but maybe that wasn't the vision that he had. I don't think she knows how to interpret it.
Yeah.
That's a lot to digest. And in fact, she says that later to Sisko.
Uh-huh.
So Vedic Beryl says, how can there be thunder on a day like this? And she says, I know that sound. That's gunfire. And they walk under a bridge where evil Vedic Wynn is standing. What a pleasure to come upon such a flowing exchange of spiritual harmony, she says. They turn and look up at her. She's a bit of a troll up there with that line.
Yes.
Eva Wynn says, we met before, didn't we? Major. Like she can't remember her name.
Yes, when you were trying to kill Beryl. You remember that one?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she remembers Kira as she ran up to her accusing her of trying to murder Beryl. I doubt she's really forgotten her.
Yeah.
This woman's a troll.
Oh, completely.
Oh, that's right. Major Kira from the space station. All innocent. What brings you here? I do, Beryl says. Oh, good for you, Vedic Beryl. After working so hard, you deserve a little recreation, which was a pointed comment.
Oh.
He says, says, Major Kira is here to explore her Pa, a worthy endeavor for someone who has led such a life of violence. I'm sure the Assembly wouldn't have had a problem with your encounter with the orb had Vedic Barile consulted us. And Kira looks at Barile like, what? And Barile says, no one has ever been held to that formality. You're right, of course, Wynn says, with her evil little voice, but I've always consulted with the Assembly in advance. I think of it as a courtesy, nothing more, nothing less. She asks Kira how long she'll be there, and Kira says she's not sure. Feel free to stay as many days as you'd like, even a week if necessary. I think that this is maybe a bit of a get-out hint.
Yes.
She is just nasty and scary, as she was the last time we saw her.
Wynn is wonderfully awful. Clearly, she also has a lot of spies, if she knows everything that's going on. I could picture her as having a spy network and just being awful person.
For sure. Well, like she had that Neela working for her. She's probably got all kinds of little spies everywhere.
Yeah, and manipulating people through the religion.
That's what happens when you're a zealot and you recruit other zealots.
Yeah, you can appeal to the fanatics.
Exactly. Now we go to a different part of Bajor. Some Bajoran military folks are discussing troop movements. This actor looking at a large map on the wall is very familiar. His name is Stephen Macht from lots of things, including daytime and nighttime soaps, Babylon 5, many episodes of Murder, She Wrote. He's a very familiar face. Anyway, he is General Krim, which my iPad insists is just a typo of Kim, which was pretty funny, constantly.
We'll call him General Kim from now on.
Sure. Sisko enters, introducing himself, saying, they met last year at an executive session. I remember, Commander, Krim says. I was impressed with your talk. As I recall, you disagreed with all of it, Sisko says. Yes, but you presented your argument so well. He asks what he can do for Sisko, and Sisko says there is concern in some quarters that the military is unwilling to confront the forces of the Circle. He's been observing troop movements, and he says that every time there's a potential confrontation, the military withdraw to a safer position. Krim says, you can't possibly appreciate that this is Bajoran against Bajoran, which I keep finding so weird. It's like saying human versus human. It's just such a weird thing to say. And it's also funny that there's only one government for the whole planet. I find that difficult to relate to, I guess, as a human on Earth.
Well, I think part of it is because of the Bajorans having fought the Cardassians as pretty much a united front. So
I suppose
if you spent so long fighting as a united front, for some people, the concept of a Bajoran versus Bajoran war is probably horrific. Wait a minute, we're all Bajorans together. Why are we fighting? And I think that's also a kind of a Star Trek sort of thing as well.
It is looking
at people as being united.
Yeah. Star Trek is making the world, and I don't mean the Earth, I mean the world in general, so huge that a planet becomes kind of small in that context.
Oh, I see.
And so it's looked at as like a singular thing.
Yeah.
I appreciate that the provisional government, will stand only if the military supports it. We're all patriots, Commander. Sisko says we have intelligence that the Circle is being armed by the Krasari. I hadn't heard that, the general says, turning to look at him. Sisko says, well, we've been trying to track the movements and determine where the weapons are stored. The general says he needs that info, and Sisko says you'll be the first to know. Thank you, he says. Then Sisko says, I understand my first officer, Major Kira Nerys, has not been reassigned yet. It would mean a great deal to me to get her back. That's out of my purview, Commander. You might want to discuss that with Minister Jaro. Then he pauses and he says, you told me about the Krasari before you asked for the favor. You could have tried trading that information for the favor. I wouldn't do that, Sisko says, smiling. And General Krim says, I'll remember that about you. And then Sisko leaves.
That almost seemed like it was a warning. I'll remember that about you.
It was hard to read.
Yeah.
I don't think it was meant as a warning. I think it was meant as, I see you're a man of honor. I do think that's how it was meant, but I agree. It was difficult to read the way it was worded.
I'm wondering if, because he's dealing with politicians, there would be lots of petty bargaining, and the general is surprised that that's not where Sisko starts from.
Now we go to the station. Dax and Lee have been delaying the Krasari ship from docking. They've been waiting for Miles and Odo to dig up some info, but can't put it off any longer. The Krasari dude says he's been delayed for 6 hours, and his government is going to launch a formal complaint. Lee apologizes and says there's been some confusion with their manifest interface. As he talks to the alien, you see Miles in the background, like, opening containers and peering inside. Apparently, Odo and Miles are trying to find weapons. But the alien guy says he's carrying herbaceous materials. We're back to that botany stuff.
Yep.
Lee tries to calm him down, saying it will be cleared up in a few minutes, but the dude is mad and hangs up on him. So we go over to the ship and we see Miles moving some containers around. Dax calls and says, we don't want to hold up the Krasari any longer than necessary. And Miles is like, well, there's not much else that we can do anyway. So Dax says, look, they're due back the day after tomorrow, so maybe we can clear up any problems then. Agreed, Miles says, and he wishes the captain fair voyage.
So we see O'Brien here, but where's Odo?
Yeah, sneaky. You were wondering why the camera stayed on the floor looking at the container that Miles was moving around, and it's because Odo slimes his way off the side, turning into a stowaway rat, and the Corsari prepare to depart.
Yeah, if you've been watching the show, it should be pretty obvious what was happening there.
It's been a while, though, since we have had the weird camera angle to Odo shapeshifting.
Do you think Odo likes turning into rodents? That does seem to be a favorite of his.
I don't think he cares. I think it's all the same to him. It's probably easier. Back down on Bajor, Kira is standing in the garden staring into space when Sisko comes up behind her. He apologizes for interrupting her meditation, and she says she was daydreaming, not meditating. She tells him that she encountered an orb, and it's given her a great deal to think about. A great deal of naked, for sure. He says, they do have a way of doing that, don't they? He just came by to let her know that he hasn't given up on getting her back, but for the moment, there seems to be bigger problems for the leaders down here. She tells him about the gunfire in the distance, and he says the distance is getting closer. The Circle's for real. They've been armed for a coup, and I'm not convinced the military is going to back the provisional government. Drink. Kira is unaware of all this because they're so isolated in the monastery. They say goodbye and Sisko leaves. She turns to leave as well, but she's quickly grabbed by three Circle members, dressed like the ones who attacked Quark in the last episode.
Once again, people in robes, causing trouble.
Absolutely. They knock her out with a hypo spray and they carry her away. I don't know, how'd they get into the monastery? That's very suspicious.
Well, obviously they have supporters within the monastery. And plus, if it's that easy to get into the monastery, why didn't Kai Wynn have Beryl assassinated in the monastery?
Well, yeah, I was wondering about that too. And my guess is it would seem more suspicious on her, or maybe, you know, draw too much attention. Whereas if it had happened on Deep Space Nine, she could have just said, oh, you know, there were all these sort of radicals up there.
I was just trying to bring peace and look what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh, you'd know she'd do that.
Now we're on board the Corsari ship and we see Odo squeaking around in the corner when the Corsari alien transports a Cardassian on board. Uh-oh. Nothing good has ever come from a Cardassian, as far as I can tell.
Nope.
He says, I think you'll find everything's in order. The Corsari checks a box that the guy came in with and says, sign off on the shipment and we'll be on our way. The Cardassian signs his pad like he dropped off a UPS shipment or something. Although I was like, wait, wouldn't the receiver sign it? Yeah, he puts the data pad in a little holder on the wall and Odo the Rat eyes it as dramatic music plays. This is all, I don't know, this felt so easy. Why would the Cardassian come over to drop off the shipment? Why would the person delivering the weapons sign off on it? And why would the Cardassian sign off on anything when the whole thing is meant to be clandestine? This is just not quite right, I think.
Okay, I have a counter for that. The Cardassians love paperwork.
We did cover that in Duet.
Yeah, and I think that this is probably typically of the Cardassian way of doing things, that everything has to be signed in triplicate and ID'd. And did you submit a form 10071-432 transfer of weapons secretly?
Right. I don't know. I still don't think the Cardassians are going to implicate themselves but and leave a trail. But you're right. If they have a thing for paperwork, then okay.
You could also potentially look at it as maybe the Cardassians are just so arrogant about this. It's like, why would we get caught?
Maybe. That's almost like a movie trope of a really evil villain.
Yeah.
Now we're down on Bajor, maybe in a cave, with the Circle graffiti painted on the walls. We see some containers similar to the ones that were on the Corsari vessel. Kira is sitting in the cave as people kind of bustle around her. Then Minister Jaro appears above her on the second level of the cave, and she stands up, surprised by him. And he says, well, good afternoon.
So Nixon is behind all of it.
Right? So you're involved, she says. I am the Circle, Major. Now I understand why you wanted Lee Nalas off the planet. Yeah, the last thing I need is a great war hero capturing the devotion of the Bajoran people.
If you notice in this scene, he is wearing an awesome power suit.
Well, he's been wearing that suit the whole time.
But I think this is the first scene because they like shoot him from below and he's standing in outline.
Oh, so you see the whole thing.
Yeah, and he's kind of a big guy.
He's a very big guy.
Yeah, so he's wearing, you know, if you notice, it has very, you know, straight shoulders, real right angles on it. It gives him a very strong profile.
Yeah, it's good. She asks how he can betray his own government, but he says, I don't have to tell you. I've heard your opinion of this government. They can't even agree if they are a government, so we have to call it provisional. Drink. It's just another word for powerless. He sits down on a rock and he says, "I won't allow the Bajoran people to be powerless anymore. We've been doormats to the Cardassians and now the Federation, any great power that happens by. We will not do that again." Kira says, "If you want to change the government, you vote to change it. You don't sneak up behind them with a dagger."
Ouch.
We'll discuss politics another time. He wants to know what the Federation will do, specifically what Sisko will do when he finds out the Circle's objective. He knows she has no love for the Federation, although clearly his info is a little outdated at this point. Yeah. He says he'll send her back to the station after they get rid of Starfleet. She can have the station. He asks if they'll continue to support the provisional government, drink. She sits down in a show of defiance. I don't know, I thought she should play some politics here, but she always shows her cards too fast.
I think that's part of her. She's not...
Yeah.
She's not a political animal like the other a lot of the other characters in this show.
But she needs to learn that in the position she's in, and she could learn it, especially in situations like this.
Well, certainly Sisko should be trying to teach her how to react in these environments. I mean, Sisko is a master of it.
Yeah.
As we have seen throughout the show.
Right.
But did you notice here the way Jarrow was equating the Federation and the Cardassians? That it seemed like, in his mind, there was no difference.
Well, that's sort of what the Circle has been saying.
Yeah.
Bajor's for the Bajorans. Get everybody else off.
I guess if you look at it as any interference is bad, then even though the Federation isn't trying to invade the planet.
And they don't have labor camps. Yeah. And they're not stealing their resources. But I suppose you could look at it as if they were. They're interfering in politics. They're in the way of the wormhole. So I guess it really depends on your perspective. Whereas the Federation always thinks they're peace bringers.
Yeah. I guess if you're looking at it from the extremist standpoint, then anyone in getting involved, even the Federation, you see it as interference.
Yeah.
Did you notice when he sat on the rock how much it moved?
No. I love stuff like that. I miss that.
Watch the rock.
This cave is a little cheesy.
Yeah.
Well, he threatens her, of course.
I guess the bribery didn't work.
He says that even though he despises Cardassians, they've learned some techniques from them of how to encourage people to talk. And then the guys in robes drag her off again. I mean, either way, this isn't going to get what you want out of Kira.
Yeah.
And this just shows that he does not know her at all.
I assume he was making an assumption here that
that
Kira would be kind of like him. I mean, she was a solid freedom fighter. You know, she'd worked for the liberation of Bajor. And I guess he figured he could appeal to her on a Bajoran nationalist standpoint.
I think he was hoping that she would come over to his side. I don't think he expected her to, because he did have those guys ready to drag her off. But if she had, it would certainly have been a plus for him. Back on the station, Sisko is telling everyone that Barile reported Kira missing, and they aren't going to get much help from the local authorities because they're busy. There was no sign of a struggle. I'd assume Vedic Wynn was involved, but that's just me. And Miles wonders if she was transported off the grounds. Sisko hopes that didn't happen and that she's somewhere nearby. They need to do something, and Odo isn't due back for another 12 hours. Then Quark comes wandering in at that moment and says, "Who needs Odo when you've got his number one deputy?" Dax tries to shoo him away, but he thinks he knows where to find Kira. "Go on," Sisko says. "You see, Odo blackmailed me into helping him, a matter which I've been meaning to bring to your attention, Commander." "Quark," Sisko shouts, exasperated with him.
That's the usual response for people with Quark.
100%. Quark believes he has found the Circle headquarters in the labyrinths beneath the Parykian Peninsula. Sisko calls security, saying he needs a couple of officers to go on a rescue mission to Bajor. He tells Bashir and Dax that they are with him, and Miles will be the pilot. I don't know when Miles became like this expert pilot. He was the transporter chief. But anyway, they keep using him as the pilot on this show. Lee wants to go along, but Sisko says it's too dangerous. Lee says, "I can do this. I don't know what it means to be a Navark, but I can fight in the trenches and I take orders well. Besides, I owe her one." He nods, and he tells Dax she's in charge of DS9 then, instead of her coming along.
I like the way Lee wants to come along. He's showing that he has honor, and he will stand up for his friends and people who helped him.
But he's also showing, I think, two things. One, he doesn't quite know what he's supposed to do on Deep Space Nine. And they imply a couple of times that the things he's asked to do, he's not really comfortable with. Like being the negotiator and talking to the Kursari guy.
Oh, right,
he didn't
really
want to do that. He was uncomfortable. And a couple of times he said, "I don't really know what I'm supposed to do here." So I think that was one. This is a thing he understands, a rescue mission.
Yep. Well, like I said, he can fight in the trenches and he can take orders.
Yes, he can take orders.
These are things he knows and is comfortable with. That's a great point.
And the second thing, I think he really does feel that he owes Kira.
Oh, yeah.
something, because she rescued him and then lost her job over
yeah,
it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
A very honorable man.
As they leave, Quark calls out after them that they can discuss appropriate compensation at a more convenient time, in a very Quark on-brand way.
Poor Quark, he just wants to get paid.
So next, the shuttle takes off from the station, heading to Bajor. The Circle guys are tooling up when our crew beams into the cave. I'm not sure how nobody noticed them beaming in, but Sisko notes that there are only 5 of them visible, but they've got a lot of weapons. They hear Kira yelling in the distance, like crying out in pain. He hands everyone a comm badge and he says, "Anyone who finds Kira, pin this on her and call for transport immediately. Straight power play," he says. "Expect heavy resistance. Let's do it."
Sisko is going in guns blazing. I love it.
Another weak plan. Oh my god. So we run in and start shooting, and immediately one of the expendable NPC security dudes goes down.
Yep.
They see Kira above them on the second level of the cave, tied up. Bashir calls out to her, and then he quickly climbs up and starts untying her. "Just pin the badge on her and beam her out. Did you not listen to the instructions?"
It is Bashir.
Anyway, she's quite beaten up and bleeding. Then the second NPC goes down. You should have brought more cannon fodder. One more bad guy appears from behind Julian and shoots him. Kira then jumps up, grabs the comm badge. Julian shouts, "Chief, get us out of here," and everyone is beamed out.
Lucky they didn't use Romulan disruptors.
Yeah, I'm not buying this phaser set to stun. I don't think so. Now we're back on the station and in the infirmary. Bashir is trying to treat Kira, but she's like, "We don't have time for this," and she sits up. Bashir continues trying to treat her, and she fights him off. Sisko and Lee are in the doorway. Sisko is saying, "We have to assume Jaro will move quickly now that we've got you back." They feel like getting Lee into the Chamber of Ministers is their only hope, but Sisko thinks it's too risky. He says Lee would be dead before he had a chance to speak. And then Odo comes in, saying, "Yes, courtesy of a Cardassian weapon, the Circle is being supplied by the Cardassians." Odo holds up the UPS pad, which he borrowed from the Corsari ship, and he says he's got the proof with a Gull's thumb scan on it.
Question here. How many crew did that ship have, and why couldn't Odo have seized the ship or called on the Federation to seize the ship because it had Cardassian weapons on it?
Well, as we find out later, the Federation doesn't seem to care.
Good point.
The Circle hates the Cardassians, Kira says. Odo says, "Yeah, but they don't know it's the Cardassians. They think it's the Corsari." Lee is like, "Wait, why would the Cardassians want to help Jaro if he hates them?" Bashir says, "Because it gets them what they want the most. Rid of the Federation," Sisko says. "They're just using Jaro. Once the Federation is forced to leave, the Cardassians can come back." Lee says, "Well, we've got to do something. I've got to do something." Sisko calls Dax, who is obviously running the entire station on her own. "Open a channel to Bajor and tell them that Navark Lee Nalas wants to address the Chamber of Ministers on subspace." "All frequencies are jammed, Benjamin. We lost all comms with the planet 5 minutes ago. Again, if we had made a better plan, we could have figured this out in advance, but we don't do that. We go in, all guns blazing, all the time. Straight power play. I'm going to remember that." "Then it has started," Kira says. Sisko says, "Get me Admiral Chakoti at Starfleet Command." Back to Bajor, and Jaro is standing in the monastery when Vedic Wynn comes in. He says, "I feel the prophet smiling on me today, Vedic. The prophets have rarely encountered a paw as forceful as yours." Oh man, these two are gross.
Yep.
They're also matchy-matchy in their little outfits. "So what's it to be, Wynn?" he says. She says, "I can't interpret the prophecies for you, Essa." "I know the future," he says. "It belongs to me. I don't need your interpretation." "Then what?" "Your support. Your public support," he says. "Support from the Vedic of an order as small as mine surely would not be significant." She's lighting candles in the room as he kind of follows her around, very closely whispering in her ear. The whole thing is creepy. They're very strange bedfellows, but very chummy.
Oh, yeah. Notice here how he says he's seen the future and it belongs to him. So I assume he's been exposed to the orb.
He's seen something in the orb, yeah.
Yeah.
He says, "You stand for a return to orthodox values, as do I. We're a match made by the prophets." I'm guessing they had a naked migraine trigger. That's what happened.
Ah.
She says she wishes there were more with that opinion. "Unfortunately, as her assembly approaches the selection of a new Kai, I feel my voice is rarely heard." And then he grabs her and turns her toward him. "I can think of no one being more worthy of being the next Kai than you, Wynn. I shall do everything in my power to see that you are." It's like the meeting of evils as they look out into the sunset. It had this really weird Star Wars-y look to this whole scene.
This is such a good scene between two really skilled actors. The writing's great as well. Mm-hmm. Jaro and Wynn both need each other to achieve their goals, which is a really frightening, dark axis. Both
right.
ruthless, ambitious, and without any shred of morality or ethics.
And something in their migraine triggers has
yes.
led them to believe that they're gaining power.
Now, do you think these two are romantically involved?
I don't know. I don't think so. They certainly
yeah.
implied it, but there wasn't really anything, because I watched the scene a couple times trying to
yeah,
figure that out. So I don't think so. Now we go to Ops, and Dax says she has the Admiral in subspace, and Sisko heads into his office. But Miles stops him, saying, two assault vessels are headed this way on a direct course for Bajor. They've given all non-Bajorans 7 hours to evacuate. He goes into his office and asks the Admiral if he's up to date on his communiques, and the Admiral is. Sisko says it's not good. Jaro has the military, he's cut off comms, and assault vessels are on their way here. Chakotay asks Sisko if he's preparing to withdraw. Sisko says, well, we've just obtained evidence that the Circle's been receiving weapons from Cardassians. If we withdraw, we'll be giving Bajor and the wormhole back to them. Well, that's a hell of a turn, the Admiral says. Sisko says the Bajorans don't know the Cardassians are involved. Then the Admiral says it's a genuine political revolution internal to Bajor. Yes, but supported by the Cardassians. The Admiral says, again, but internal to Bajor. The Cardassians might involve themselves in other people's civil wars, but we don't. The Prime Directive applies, Ben. When the Admiral asks if his people on the station are in danger, he says yes. Then there's no other choice but to evacuate. That's an order, Commander. Sisko does not look thrilled. He comes out of his office asking Miles how long it would take to evacuate DS9. Miles says we could probably all get out in 3 hours. He says, I mean a complete evacuation, including all Starfleet instruments and material, all Federation property of any kind. How quickly can you do that? Well, sir, that would take days or a week. Sisko kind of looks at him, and I thought he was saying in his head, nobody gets
yeah.
me. Because then he says, well, then I guess some of us won't quite be done by the time they get here. To be continued. It's a three-parter.
I thought that was perfect Sisko as well. He's been given a direct order.
Yep.
And he basically plays the politics of it. He finds the justification to do what he wants.
Well,
oh, I can't leave because there's Federation equipment here, and my order was to remove all the Federation presence here.
I feel like
which includes
this
equipment.
Is what Picard would have done too.
Oh, I think you're right. But I would worry about Picard would follow the spirit of the orders rather than the letter of them. And I feel Sisko here is deliberately following the letter of them to basically get what Sisko wants, which is he's not giving up the
yeah,
station.
Yeah, he's not giving up. So the last note that I typed in to my notes says, uh-huh. well, all of a sudden, this show is good.
Oh my God.
That's funny. Okay. Over analysis. What have you got?
Again, I've covered most of my analysis as we've actually been going along.
Yeah.
And I think I will have more to talk about in the next episode.
When we get through the three-parter.
Yeah. Probably the only thing I'm going to bring up here is how I think the Federation seems very tone deaf about what's going on.
Yeah.
Especially with the Admiral saying, oh, well, this is not our problem. It's a Prime Directive issue. We're not going to get involved. When an openly hostile empire, the Cardassians, are supplying weapons to a troubled world that the Federation is trying to help that has a stable wormhole. That's the key to the Gamma Quadrant.
Yep.
This is strategically huge. This is the kind of thing people go to war for.
Yeah.
So it seems bizarre that they're just going, hey, well, it's not really our problem. Wouldn't you think everybody would be interested in stopping the Cardassians getting their hands on a wormhole?
I can't tell if it's just sort of lazy writing or if, as part of the writing, they really feel that the Federation would think it's the right thing to do to stay out of it. When they've already
yeah.
been through this whole thing where there were forced labor camps, there was torture of these people, and they're just going to let it happen again? Will we go back to Duet? And
right.
the Federation's response in that scenario seemed pretty awful.
Yes.
Not on the side of the righteous.
Right.
And here we are again saying they're going to come back and they're going to do the same thing. And oh well, we better withdraw. Are you kidding? Is that lazy writing? Or are they really trying to say something about the Federation?
I think that's really lazy writing.
here's how you could have justified it easily. The Cardassians could use this as a declaration of war.
Mm.
You're interfering with the Bajorans. The Federation is trying to annex this planet. We can't allow that. So we're coming to the defense of Bajor. You would have put the Federation in a political and military bind at that point, and it would have given a much better justification.
I do think to a large degree, they try to come up with stories that show the commander in this case, or the captain, or whoever the leader is in the story, will go above and beyond the rule book to do the right thing. I think that's an important part of Star Trek. It happens many times. It's happened even, you know, in the original show and in the original cast movies and in the Kelvin movies. It's happened everywhere. The Prime Directive is involved. And I think there are a lot of examples of where the Prime Directive makes things cloudy.
Yes.
But we expect the heroes of the story to still err on the side of right.
Yes.
And so we expect Sisko to, but in that episode duet, he did not.
Well, we've seen that before with Sisko, like in Progress, where he basically made Bashir give a medical reason for the old guy to stay down on the planet for a few more days.
Yeah, to a much smaller degree, though. That was not a Prime Directive issue. That was him just trying to protect Kira.
But it was showing Sisko as a Starfleet officer prepared to do what he thought was right versus the strict rules.
I see what you're saying. That's just not quite in line with my point. My point was much more about the Prime Directive, I guess, and the bigger issues and, you know, right versus wrong, not protecting your people, which I also expect them to do. That's a leadership thing.
Yeah.
In this particular case, to me, this is more about being on the right side of history.
And that, I would say, would be Sisko would err as a character to pick the right side.
Yeah.
But then and he does. Before...
And he does, but he didn't in Duet.
Which is strange. Well, it's...
Well, ultimately in Duet, he didn't have to. He didn't have to make the decision.
Yeah.
Because it turned out that the guy was not who he claimed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But still, we felt like he was erring on the wrong side.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to equate it to the Prime Directive type issues where there are many situations where we see the captain or the leader in the situation who is really making a decision between right and wrong, and they're accepting that right is not necessarily in line with the Prime Directive.
Well, yeah, like we saw in the opening of Into Darkness, where they saved that pre-warp civilization by stopping the volcano, even though it was a violation of the directive.
Yes, exactly. At the beginning of that movie, yeah. That was exactly what I was thinking, yeah. Anything else for overanalysis?
No, I think I will talk about it some more in the next episode.
Well, then let's move to women in the future. I really dug that Kira was enough of a threat for Jaro to kidnap her and try to get info out of her and try to get her onto his side. I quite liked that, I guess, because it didn't matter that she was female.
No, and I think it was interesting that he so misjudged her.
Absolutely. And I really loved the friendships, especially how she and Odo showed their love for each other, the casual conversation in crisis that she had with Jadzia. That felt very real, very human. I mean, I recognize she's Bajoran, but I think I've said this before that I only really care about how we illuminate the human condition. I really like that. I know you didn't like that scene. At least you didn't like the way it was executed.
Yes.
I love that scene so much because I felt really connected to it. I felt like I understood what was happening. Maybe it was just the stage direction that you didn't like, but I loved the way they interacted with each other. I loved a little bit of humor in there. Humor is a huge thing for me in Star Trek. I want to laugh. I didn't want that scene to end. And the way that it ended, I liked too, because they brought in that serenity of Beryl. And they also brought in something for Kira to look forward to. And she didn't have that before. So I thought that was all good.
Yes. And I liked at the end of that scene how he said spending time with the monastery could help with a spirit that's been bruised.
Yeah.
Which I thought summed that up nicely because she'd done something very noble and dangerous at her own peril and got kicked in the teeth for it.
Yeah.
By the people who should be supporting her.
Yes. And I also appreciate the power of evil Vedic Wynn.
Oh.
She is take no prisoners. She is trying to gain power and she's doing it by aligning and kind of manipulating and working on the ego of this other character. she feels like an equal to him, at least in the writing. Probably a large part of that is straight up in the acting because she's fantastic.
Yeah.
And then there's also, to me, a little bit of the costuming that gives her power. She's got that crazy thing on her head, which makes her a foot taller than she is. That probably lifts her up a bit. That character's impressive.
I saw them as allies or partners. I saw them as much more of a partnership.
Yes, except she held back a bit until he said, oh, I'll make you Kai. And then she's like, oh, well, then the prophets are truly smiling on us.
That's true, yes.
The only complaint I really have is that Dax, again, is just like a part of the set. You know what I mean? She doesn't have enough. She's barely involved so far in these first two episodes of the season. She does have more of a part in the third episode, which is good.
Right.
But they could use her more.
Right. Have her fly the shuttle.
Anything. Give her some lines. I don't know. She's great. She's either in the bar getting creeped on, which hasn't happened since, I don't know, if wishes were horses, which was a while ago at this point. Or she's sitting at her console typing something in.
Surfing the internet.
Googling. Okay. I think that's it for Women in the Future. Let's move on to thumbs up, thumbs down, or thumbs neutral. What is your rating?
Absolute thumbs up. Great episode on so many levels.
Agreed. Thumbs up. Best episode so far.
Excellent.
Okay. That's it for Season 2, Episode 2. Come back next week for Episode 3. In the meantime, if you'd like to tell us your own over-analysis of this or any episode, or if you just want to say something nice, please email us at rebingeit@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at rebingeit. Also, check us out on talkthroughmedia.com. You can leave feedback for us there as well, and you can listen to all of our other awesome podcasts.
Thanks for joining us on the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast.
That's it for me.
And that's it from me.